First case in our calendar is 95-1884, State of Ohio versus Andre Lamont Jones. Mr. Ketchmer.
Distinguishes the Barnes case, because that seems so clear. And that leads me to the question, haven't we ruled on this before, and doesn't that make it really a case of error rather than one of law, and even though the Court of Appeals might be wrong, should we be hearing it?
You make a very good point, Your Honor. I think what the problem here is, and that occurred to me, is more a matter of this court needs to give some guidance to the lower courts in this state. I think what happened here was a prime example. I think what happened was we had a knee-jerk course of conduct analysis imposed on the lower court. I believe in reading the Second District's opinion in this matter, they felt that Barnes did not, in fact, give them power to look at.
Well, here you have a vaginal and an oral rape. What you have in Barnes? A vaginal and an oral rape. And the court said, this court said, those are separate crimes, separate animus, and are separate crimes, didn't it?
Well, what it seems in this case, Your Honor, that's correct, and that's not what the argument is here, because we've got to concede that the oral and vaginal rapes cannot be engaged in a lot of justice. But what we have here, and this fact situation is unique, and I think it brings out the flaws in the conduct analysis. We have a situation where the victim was forced purpose. He had to force an intervening act. That intervening act forced this woman to have oral sex with him again so that he could have vaginal sex a second time. And what had happened was in the trial court, this was considered four separate acts. However, in the Court of Appeals, they did in fact call the bar and said, yeah, we'll combine we cannot combine the vaginal rates and the oral rates, but we combine the two orals and the two vaginals. There's going to be two types, so I think it's a little bit different there. I think if it had just been a combination of the oral and the vaginal, that would be absolutely correct. You would not be standing. However, the circumstances in this case, I think this is what we're trying to bring this court's attention to, is that there needs to be some flexibility in cases of multiple rates.
Well, do you want every act of vaginal intercourse a separate and distinct crime?
Your Honor, that brings me exactly to my point. Not necessarily, but what I'm arguing for is the flexibility of a trial court to determine factually if there was a separate act and if there was a separate evidence. I think here we can see clearly. And I think it gives an offensive common sense. So we have a distinct ending of the first act of vaginal sex.
So you would go along with taking into consideration time factor, location factor, those things that would tend to show that they are separate and distinct acts of rape?
Absolutely. And in fact, I believe this is working in concurrence of Barnes, site of case in Wisconsin, Harrell versus State, which laid out seven factors. I don't want to see this court make a wrong. I'm not asking for that. But what I am asking for is to let the trial courts know that there is some flexibility, that they can look at the circumstances of, in the Sabre's book, in this court, again, which is defined as a purpose, an immediate motive. And the court stated that you can look to the surrounding circumstances to determine this. And what I'm saying is, the trial court should have that flexibility to not just go to the conduct analysis, but to be able to get those elements to go to state.
I assume you're concerned with the time being spent in prison for these things, right?
Your Honor, not in this case, but...
Because in this case, it comes out to almost the same time.
It comes out exactly the same time, Your Honor.
So you shouldn't consider that?
I'm not understanding myself.
Well, the time factor in this case is basically the same whether you do it one way or the other. Isn't that correct?
That's correct.
So the time factor is something that you do not consider in the imposition of the various crimes contemplated in the act.
I don't think so in this case, Your Honor. However, I could have obviously in other cases. In this case, the trial judge chose to run the cases concurrently. But obviously it would have been in other cases. But I think the reason we brought this particular case to the court's attention is because of the unique fact that it brings this issue into prominence. I think that when we do an analysis for allied constitutional somehow the analysis that we've done so far, I don't believe fits the reality.
Well, we're not bound by it. How do you distinguish the Elyell case?
Your Honor, I think we ought to, number one, I think the Elyell case is very similar to this thing that the court felt. And in fact, it states, we don't have guidance from Brazier or Ware, you know, so we can tell whether legal act, there is a paragraph in that effect.
They held successive rapes over, an hour and a half or 2 hour period of time.
That's correct.
Allied offenses, and we're not separate animals.
I think you're just plain wrong, and I think the reason for that, Your Honor, is again that it does not take into account the unique situation with multiple rapes. What you're doing in a case like Elyell, you got it, Your Honor, he comes in, enters the house, has vaginal rape. He does vaginal rape a second time. Then he and the victim go to the bathroom. He's threatening her the entire time. There's a chime in. He comes back and decides, by God, I'm going to do it again. And he does it again. And he is rewarded, basically, for doing it three times instead of one, where there is a clear break. And I think, again, that's why we're standing here. I believe both in Elroy, if we eligible analysis based on Coors' conduct.
So if we ruled for you, you would expect or want us to say that we disapprove of Al-Yell?
Yes, I would, Your Honor. Not so much in the... But yes, I would. I think we're all with the reason being, again, that I believe the court felt it was bound to take this particular approach. Your Honor, course of conduct is always arbitrary. We're always going to have a trial court guessing where a higher court is going to go on. I think that it's less arbitrary to go with a completed acts analysis. And again, only if the evidence supports it. Sometimes it will not. In Elgell, I believe they stated that they weren't sure of time intervals. There was a lot of information missing. Court of Appeals made a guess on Mr. Elgell's physical status, assuming that he was lost his direction. There was nothing in the records of the record to state that.
In this case, there have been four separate penetrations. No. I'm asking you. If in this case, there have been four separate vaginal penetrations and no oral activity involved, would you have said it's all one crime or four separate rapes?
Your Honor, again, I don't mean to back it, but it depends on the circumstances. Let's say it was a time. Let's say you did one and very
over the two-hour period. Taking 15-minute breaks.
I would say the word before. Yes. And the reason I would say that, Your Honor, is in, I think in a similar case would be the case that Mr. Bird cited in Wisconsin, the Carroll case, where the gentleman took the lady downstairs, waited her undressed, waved her, and then had a conversation with her, went through her clearly.
Yeah,
just in space about half hour, 20 minutes, half an hour, and then waves her again.
So your argument isn't that it was another type of rape, an oral rape, that breaks the continuity? Because
no,
that's really what your brief seems to say.
It's both, Your Honor. It's both. I'm saying in this situation, we have a very clear what this court has called a change in the course of conduct, where the defendant changed what he was doing and went off on a separate purpose. What I'm saying is that any number of those factors that we discussed earlier from the Warner's case, any one of those seven or even more, what I'm asking is that the trial court have the flexibility to look at the totality of the circumstances, the factors involved, and to determine if there is sufficient evidence, one act is ended and another is begun. It's only common sense that if you complete an act of intercourse and you are done, and there is no question that you are done, you're in this game, and you decide to go on again, you have a separate purpose. You have made a separate act of will. You have determined that you are going to break this woman again. That is a separate end.
Do you think Judge Wolf had it exactly right?
Yeah, how so?
In his concurring and part, deciding in part opinion.
Your Honor, I don't know. I think that there is much confusion here, and I think that we were missing the point. I believe that all of the judges did it. We should focus on the act, or at least we should be able to, and not be forced exclusively to go into this conduct. And I think that's what the underlying problem with this case and with Bellino. And yet, I think what the court has to do here is give some guidance to the lower courts to let them have the flexibility to go on, and if the evidence is there, analyze completed acts. Your Honor, I think I've got 2 minutes more.
You hit it about a minute ago, so if you want to save any time.
Sorry, I'm going to stop and just again say what we're asking the court to clarify for the lower courts that they may have the flexibility to demand completed acts if, in fact, there is sufficient evidence to do so. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cashmere. Mr. Cloud. Mr. Cloud, your statement of facts seems to differ substantially from the statement of facts of the appellant, and the Court of Appeals seemed to adopt the statement of facts that's in the appellant's brief. I assume that was your statement of facts was essentially your client's story and her version of what happened, and trier of fact concluded that that's not what happened. Is that a fair conclusion?
Yes, I wouldn't really have to answer that. I think that's the facts that I made.
Charges. Whether or not these are allied officers.
not submitted. I did find most of those factors were even met by the evidence and the facts submitted at that trial. In this case, it's very simple. There's nothing in the record other than we know what the time was. We know that there was money. We know that the place was all saved in one place. We know that there was cumulative punishments and the prosecution was wrong about that in response to your question, but that's one of the factors. And it has to be considered in determining whether or not it's allied. There's a tremendous lack of evidence with respect to those types of factors in this case. And that's why I think this court can follow LBL and confirm the appellate court's decision. And I think that's what the lower court did. Looked at LBL and said, this is more of a point we've got. Watch doesn't apply. But we're not talking, we're not watching. They are simple. You know that as a matter of law. So that's out. We're not even discussing it. I think what the issue is in this case, and the prosecution continues to miss this issue, is, as stated in Delia, when you have multiple sexually assaulted episodes against the same bodily organs, does that constitute an allied officer? Delia said, yes, it does. And you may charge him for a human aggressor. And I think LBL really is responsive to the facts of the evidence in this case. I think it provides some guidance to this court. I think it gives the best flexibility to the lower courts and the prosecution. And I think if we follow that logically as a matter of public policy, we can prevent abuse and findings that lead to absurdity, which at every time a sexually assaulted episode against one bodily orifice is more or less stopped by the fact that the penis or the finger or whatever the instrument is used to penetrate that bodily orifice comes out of that orifice and then it moves back in, that is not another offense. The other thing that I would like to address to this court, which is really the proposition of law of manslaughter and prosecution of which is animals. I think it's another indication of the prosecution's confusion in this area. The proposition of law says there was a separate animus in each one of the two acts. But then it gets into talking about how these offenses are included separately. The only issue that we're looking for this court, if you look at the proposition of law against by the prosecution, is whether there are separate names with respect to the sexually assaulted episodes here.
Given your recitation of the facts, why don't you contest the conviction?
Well, Your Honor,
you in effect say from start to finish this was, at the worst, consensual. And that she was really the moving party.
I guess that's why I started out the argument, saying that's what I believe. I would also argue legally that we don't even get it out of 29, 31, 25 days. If we don't get out of 29, 40, 41, 25 days, we don't even get to the meeting. And we're arguing to be because that's the process of the law of the my argument in the lower court, which I think is not really addressed, I suppose, is that we don't even get past that. That the two vaginal sexually assaulted episodes were similar content.
Well, given all this, why didn't you file a cross appeal? That's my question. Understand my question of why you didn't file a cross appeal? Well, you're contending. Okay. You're contending she was not raped.
I thought I could Well, first of all, I didn't see that in the report of the road, but they find the sidewalks and address the issues. Getting back to this question about ends, the rock use in this country today, so that this is water standards. And I think really it's one of the first questions that we have to do the law, look back to the state, get to know the first question, and the justice of the well, what's the answer? And I suppose the answer to the helping this case was to achieve sexual gratification by the vaginal sexual assault of medicine. And when he
take you off to on a different tack. This isn't argued, and I haven't seen it mentioned any place. But is it possible that there are reasonable that there should be a little different test applied to rape, which is the ultimate violation of a person's, particularly a woman's body, where there's not a murder? Should we consider at all the fact that, without even empirical data, which maybe there is, but we don't have it, that would indicate that one violation such as this of a woman creates risk or physical harm, and also certainly emotional harm, and that two or three or four or more over a period of time where the woman is held and without her consent and subjected to this kind of conduct, that causes her even more harm, particularly perhaps emotional harm, that should be a reason that we might look at the test for this a little differently than we might other crimes. But isn't it intuitive, though, that a woman who's, if the jury, the trier of fact here, obviously believed the woman's story, the victim's story, rather than your client's story, isn't it intuitive that somebody who was subjected to the conduct to which she was subjected is going to suffer, could suffer considerable emotional harm? And that the more times she is subjected to this kind of conduct, the more likely it is that the emotional harm may be more severe?
Well, honestly, I'm not a psychologist. I don't have this kind of condition.
That's physical. That's risk of physical harm. I'm talking more about the emotional harm that comes from this person being subjected to this.
Nobody's ever carried that through, and I think that maybe presents a problem to this court because then you're back into this balance. Do we consider that? And I certainly do not want to
Well, but the absurd result, if that's my problem with the use absurd result, here's a person who is subjected to short of murder, it seems to me, it's about the worst thing you can do to a person, and to a woman, particularly. And we say it's an absurd result to hold someone accountable for each act, because it's a course of conduct, or because it's their individual, even taking the state's view, it's an individual act. What's the difference? I mean, she's been forced to do four acts that in a short period of time that she didn't want to do. I mean, if we take her view, obviously there's a difference of opinion about the facts, but we've got a record in which the jury or the finder of fact decided that the victim was telling the truth. And so what's absurd about saying to someone, if you subject another person to that kind of whatever you want to call it, you're gonna pay dearly for it. We're not gonna say, well, this is a course of conduct and it's all one act. It isn't all one act. The person can stop anytime he wants to. He's got the volition to do it once, to do it twice, to do it 10 times, to let her go. And so what's absurd about holding someone accountable for that? Say if you're not the victim, it seems to me. I just think making somebody go through this 3-4 repeated times, it, to me, is just, I mean, it's more than once. It seems to me there is a difference. And unfortunately, we don't have cases where there's evidence that shows, that tends to prove that 3 times is a lot worse than 1 time. But
let me give you an alternative argument for that as well. We're saying there are other factors.
What's wrong with the state's test that is being urged on us, that once the act is completed, one act is completed, that's a crime. Next act is another crime, even though it appears to be a course of conduct that occurs, acts occur fairly close together. What's wrong with that as a test?
I don't think it meets the standard set forth for the law under 29, 21, 28, 5. That says it has to be completed separately. Sexual gratification from the vaginally sexually assaulted episode. And it may sound hard
Thank you, Mr. Cloud. Mr. Katchmer, you saved about a half a minute of your time.
Your Honor, 2 points. First, addressing the physical harm of rape, the reality of rape. Every time a woman's vagina is entered, there is the threat of pregnancy. It may not happen the first time, it may not happen the second time. Third time, right. Third time, no. Fifth time, no. Every entry carries the potential for pregnancy, harm. You can't tell which one. Everyone carries that. Second, Your Honor, if we could not distinguish similar acts, if, as Mr. Cloud says, 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 separate entries of a woman's vagina were not separate acts, why in the world would we have the seven factors in Barnes so that we can distinguish separate acts? Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.